Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast, episode 18. I'm Dan Tomlinson, and I'm joined, as always, by Rich Harrison, a.k.a. Pommy. Rich, how are you doing, pal?
I'm good, mate. And you?
Yeah, not bad, thanks, pro. Even if there was no Hull FC this weekend, both of our fixtures, first the derby, and then obviously Salford at home getting called off, which was a little bit frustrating, but I suppose on the flip side, opportunity to rest up a little bit, you know, get some bodies back. I suppose we can't really complain too much. It's just this run of games we had where we could really bolster our win percentage, and I think that's a disappointing aspect of it, because, you know, with the Hull FC of this year, I'd have backed them in both games.
Yeah, especially when you look at some of the other games that have been called off, and you look at some teams that would have been scheduled to play one of the big boys, you know, and then, you know, it looks like it's going to be postponed, if it's ever played at all, you know. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that we were playing teams that we'd have expected to rack up a fairly easy win against, yeah, it's disappointing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's sort of subtly descending into a farce again, just like it did last year, yeah. After it resumed after the first lockdown, and it's sort of like, well, who saw this coming? Well, every Tom, Dick and Harry.
Everybody
but those that matter, innit? And I saw Wigan crying wolf last night after the defeat to St Helens, and they knew the score, didn't they? I mean, Super League clubs, they all agreed to this fixture list, and they all agreed to three doubleheader weekends, and they agreed to, you know, starting a late start at the end of March and finishing in October for a World Cup, which is still up in air. So it's not like it was thrown together, you know, out of their control. It was exactly within their control, and they've allowed this basket case to unfold.
Yeah, and look, to be honest, mate, I'd be amazed if the World Cup goes ahead. I would be really amazed if the World Cup goes ahead, especially the fact that, you know, you've got a lot of players coming from Australia, New Zealand, and those countries have got 14 days mandatory lockdown that you have to do, you know, self-isolation and hotel quarantine and all this kind of stuff. And when you return, I'd be very, very surprised. I'd be surprised if we could raise a team, honestly, to go over there. I think a lot of players would be just like, do you know what, I'm not going. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, like, the way that it's painted over here is that Europe is COVID central, you know, and if you go over there, you're likely to get it. So, you know, although we've got a big bit of a flare up in Sydney at the moment, which is why our NRL games this week were all played behind closed doors, more or less. Certainly the Sydney ones were anyway. So yeah, it was. I'd be amazed if the World Cup goes ahead. So maybe there's catch-up fixtures after, you know, when the grand final was about to be scheduled. But then, you know, you've booked, is it Old Trafford again, the grand final?
Yeah, yeah.
So you've booked Old Trafford, you know, what can you do?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, they'll expect to get a decent crowd, you'd hope so. But then if you push it back, you're going into flu season, aren't you, with obviously the OK winter.
Yep.
If you move it, it's then dangerous. I mean, never mind the World Cup, which I must admit is in serious doubt now, it has to be. I'm actually in doubt whether the Super League season will finish. That's how serious it's getting on, because it's becoming a farce. You think we're a dozen rounds in. You know, we've had about 8 or 9 cancellations now. Another one literally just happened a few hours before we start recording. Huddersfield v Castleford's off on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Apparently, Huddersfield can't raise a team now. And it's just a farce. It's happening every week. And I do get really pessimistic with this stuff, because it's never a St Helens or a Wigan or a Catalans or an Hull, because we want to play right now, or a Warrington, because we want to get our win percentage up. It's always a lower-end club who we've gotten out to really play for, or a Leeds who have, you know, pulled off a masterstroke, cancelling games against St Helens and Catalans, but obviously fitting raring to go against Salford and Lee. It's either a happy coincidence or there's something, you know, a little bit more sinister there.
Yeah. Well, you know, Gary Heatherington and happy coincidences. Where would the sport be without Gary Heatherington and happy coincidences?
Exactly.
Although I did think that there was a little bit of karma this week with a guy getting an extended deal, and every other club in the league cheers.
Yeah, what made me laugh is Phil Jernos was saying, "Oh yeah, Richard Aguirre's got some really good results recently. He's building." I'm like, mate, he's beating Castleford, who we had little trouble in turning over. He's beating Lee, the worst team in the competition. They've beaten Salford, who are a basket case right now, and ended the game with about 10 men because he had 2 sent off, 1 sin binned, and you'll name it.
Yeah.
So like, open your eyes a little bit. You know, they need to challenge. You know, they need to challenge the competition and where it's going more, because it's an absolute farce. It really is. Mm. And what's descending right now? It's amateur, and it's like they need to pull their head out there. Ask the Super League chairman. I mean, there's talk right now about renegotiating something with the RFL, so they're the main power holder again in the Super League clubs there was at all. But whether that will happen or not, who knows? Because, you know, your Ian Lennigans, your Eamon McManuses, they like to think they run the show, don't they? But it's all just a farce. I mean, how can you not be governed by your governing body?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, that's the problem. It was the RFL and the Super League are pretty much open warfare, isn't it? It's a ridiculous spectacle to people outside of the sport, you know? I mean, it's similar to the whole soccer thing with this European Super League that we're talking about doing, and, you know, and the fact that Premier League and you know, Premier League and then the Football League and everything, when that all started, it felt like a breakaway. Although, it's a basic tenet of English sport that there's really transparent promotion and relegation between leagues, which, you know, Australians find absolutely mind-blowing. That, you know, you could support a team and they finish bottom and then the next year they're in a lower league. But Australians don't get that. They don't operate on a league basis like that. You know, it's 16 teams and it's franchises and that's it. You know, if your club goes out of business, it goes out of business because it's bankrupt and because it's no longer a going concern. You know, so it's completely different to us over here. But even then, that kind of, as we were talking about last week or the week before about the Super League war, with the ARL back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was the discontent about how much money people were getting from broadcast deals and the fact that they thought that the sport was stagnating and they could get more money off Murdoch than they could get off terrestrial TV and blah, blah, blah. It's dollars that pay the bills and it's dollars that speak volumes, you know. And unfortunately, Super League have got the TV deal and the RFL haven't. And that gives the Super League, you know, massive, you know, it basically gives them a winning hand in the poker game of rugby league, you know.
Yeah, and that TV deal for also 2022, it's a 2-year deal, isn't it, 22 and 23. It's significantly reduced to what it is now.
Yeah.
I know, obviously, that's implicated by what's gone on in the COVID world, but no one isn't telling me that's also a decision made by Sky to look at rugby league right now and think, you know, it's nothing short of, you know, a loop, you know, a circus, a basket case.
Yeah. And you see, and there's your difference, because over here, you got Fox who play every game, you know, apart from the grand final and State of Origin. That's the only two things to catch on live. So there's your every game live. And then Channel 9, cherry pick, a Thursday night game, a Friday night game, and a Sunday afternoon game. So they pay rights as well. And then you've got streaming rights. And then they sell it overseas as well to Sky and to Sky New Zealand and all the rest. So over here, it's just a bigger pie. Do you know? And because it's the leading code of football, certainly in Sydney and Queensland, the money is huge. And even then, they're still talking about wanting a better deal. And it was, you know, Channel 9's tinkering with the rules and saying to the game last year, well, you know, if you go into lockdown and you can't fulfil your fixtures, well, then you're a breach of contract with us because we pay you to deliver these games every week. So if you're not delivering the games every week, you're in breach of contract and we'll renegotiate the contract. And it was in that renegotiation of the contract that Channel 9 said, well, we want this rule change and this rule change and this rule change. And they got it. Channel 9 did exactly the same thing with netball. Of all sports, netball. They changed the rules and they made like almost like a big bash, you know, like a 2020 cricket type thing. They made like a quicker game of netball. And it went really big over here. And Channel 9 was showing it on a Saturday afternoon and a Sunday afternoon before the football. And it was really big. And basically the rule changes were because Channel 9 wanted to make it a more TV-friendly sport. And they went out and did exactly the same with rugby league. And that's why now we've only got one referee. And that's why we've got the six agains. And that's why, you know, the whole Volandis thing over here, it's all because of the TV money. All of it.
But at the end of the day, the product was perfect. And we bang this drum pretty much every episode. It was the perfect TV sport as it was. Rugby league was perfect. It had a few issues, like everything does, you know, in sport. But on the whole, it was pretty much perfect. It didn't need tinkering. And that the set restarts thing, it's always be careful what you wish for, because they have literally ruined the game. The way they're going right now with the head-eye stuff is nothing short of ludicrous. I mean, there was that hit on Lachlan Cope last night, which resulted in a penalty for St. Helens. And I saw Sam Tonkins put a post out on Twitter saying, what is actually happening to our great game? Because it wasn't even a penalty, never mind a bloody sin bin.
No, it wasn't.
It was, it's just embarrassing. Yeah. And the way the game's going on that front, it's disturbing, because it's not what I fell in love with all, you know, 20 years ago when I was a young lad. It's completely changed since then. I mean, that the clips of like Sam Burgess absolutely pelting through in pran through my mind with a shoulder charge, they ruined all that.
Yep.
I mean, what did my generation, all the lads that I used to play with, we grew up watching, you know, YouTube reels of Sonny Bill Williams smashing people with his shoulder. They took all that out of the game. Now you can't clobber anyone. Now if someone falls into you, you get sent your marching orders. It's ridiculous.
And you know, the shoulder charge thing happened because one bloke had died in, he was around Newcastle, Maitland, I think, around here, Newcastle. He died during a game because someone shoulder charged him and it, you know, it drove his jawbone into his brain and it killed him instantly on the pitch. He was in a junior game, or, you know, in like a Sunday league game. And they petitioned the sport to outlaw it and everything, and it became outlawed. And then, you know, obviously then it's gone into the international rules, so therefore Super League and the English game, it's not allowed anymore. But again, that was because of one incident, you know, freak incident. And they've changed the rules because of it. Yeah, there's a lot of knee-jerk. And, you know, as a sport, we've always been right at the vanguard of changing things. You know, I mean, the whole reason the sport existed was because we needed to change things, you know, and then the six tackle rule was new and innovative, and that was to stop teams getting on a roll and actually maintaining possession for an entire game. And there was actually, I was reading the thing the other day about it, saying that when it actually came in, the limited tackle rule, it was because of a game between Huddersfield and Hull KR, where Huddersfield, in the 60s this is, Huddersfield kicked off and then didn't touch the ball again the entire first half. It was all Hull KR. They just had the possession of the ball. They were just rolling forward, scoring, getting the ball back from the kickoff, rolling forward. And Huddersfield didn't touch the ball again the entire first half. And that's when the game was so boring and so laborious that people went, we need to change this. We need to do something about it. And they brought in four tackle rule first. And then they realised that wasn't probably quick enough. And the possession was getting over too quickly, so six seemed to be the perfect one. And it was literally unashamedly borrowed from American football. You know, the fact, you know, four downs, you know, four attempts to get to 10 metres. Really, that was really unashamedly borrowed from them. And more by accident than design, I think we hit upon more or less the perfect formula for the sport. But now we're just tinkering. And we're trying to make something that was already pretty well perfect extra perfect, and we need to stop it. I mean, over here the big thing for me was the six again and all the rest of it. That's all good, yeah, fine, whatever. But then the extra six again, you know, where they're not just doing it for offsides, they're doing it for rookie infringements, and they're doing it for every little thing now. I mean, a team, as long as they don't think anyone's going to get sin-binned, the team will do it on purpose now, and they'll try and push a referee. Now, what used to happen when we had two referees was you had one policing the ruck and the 10-metre. Sorry, one policing the ruck and the other one policing the 10 metres. Now you've got one bloke trying to do both, and he's doing both poorly. And I know you was only ever had one ref in England, but it just now there's so many things that a ref has to look for because of this six again and because of all the rest of it. It's ridiculous. And I know it's to stop, you know, the guy with a whistle in his mouth saying, you're offside. But it used to be, you're offside, you blow the whistle. Then you're offside again. If it's the same play, you blow the whistle, you bring him over and you say, mate, this is repeated infringement, one more, you're in the bin. And then the third time, you blow the whistle, you send a bloke to the sin bin, and then I tell you what, that makes set of six. That team are not offside because they know you mean business.
Yeah.
Whereas now, it's just waving your arm for another six. It's just, it doesn't seem to be, you know, unfortunately, it just allows another team an attacking team to get on that roll. And once an attacking team's on the roll, you saw it this week in the NRL, you know, three consecutive games that were absolute blowouts. And it's going to keep happening.
It is. And don't get me wrong, I mean, watching Tom Trbojevic right now is nothing short of rugby league perfection. But I don't know. I don't want to watch 66-0 massacres. I want to watch games that are intense. You know, like I say, even last night in the Super League, St. Helens Wigan, it's supposed to be our most intense game of the season over here. It was boring. I turned off after 25 minutes. I just wasn't enjoying it. It's not, like I say, rugby league, it's just not what I grew up with. And it does sound like a broken record. And I sort of think, well, you know, like I say, I've got a mate who I mentioned a few times called Ian Fresh, and he says it all the time, the game isn't what he grew up with. And I get where he's coming from because it changes that much.
And so what I grew up much. With.
No, it worked for you.
And you did right. No, you're right. You're right. It's not what I grew up with as well. And you know what? And I'm the same as you. I'm a rugby league nerd. You know, I'm a nuffy. I'm an absolute nerd. And I will watch every game of NRL. And I'll watch as many games of Super League as I can and all the rest of it. But at the moment, I'm picking and choosing the games I watch. A bit like you said the other week, you might watch two or three. I'm picking and choosing the games I'll watch because I know I don't want to be bored, and I don't want. You know, I try and watch every game I can because I do this podcast with you, and because I want to be informed, and because I want to speak from my own experience of watching a game rather than reading a report on, you know, on one of the websites or whatever, and just regurgitating information. I want to have my own opinion, but it's bloody hard. It's a slog at the moment. It really is. It's a real slog.
It is, and this is coming from, you know, two blokes that I'd say pre-COVID, pre-set restart, would watch every game religiously, every single weekend. And I wouldn't watch them all live, I'd watch them maybe during the week, you know, stick one on a Tuesday night after training or on a Wednesday or whatever. But now I can't be bothered, it doesn't interest me anymore, and it's sad. That's the way the game's gone. I mean, I started watching Melbourne, Sydney Roosters the other night, and the prime example you set restart there was Sydney Roosters were pinned in their own 20. They couldn't get out. They got a set restart. The tackle count obviously, you know, restarted. And they still, Melbourne was still on top. They still had that defensive intensity. So the set restart gave Sydney no benefit whatsoever because they still couldn't get out their own 20. Two plays later, they knocked the ball on. Melbourne pick it up and score, you know, on the next play. What's the point in that? Whereas in normal times, they would have got the penalty. They would have calmed down, you know, the leaders in the team would have said, right, okay, quick breather, lads. They would have kicked a touch, you know, the downfield again, the probably completing again in Melbourne's half. Whereas you set restart, they're still pinned in their own 20, still under pressure, make an error, ball's turned over, end up conceding. How's that good for the game? It's an absolute farce. And the set restarts, they can be manipulated just like any rule. And you know, teams work out how to manipulate, and like you'll say, when to give them away as well. It's on a first tackle and you've pinned a team in their own half. If you give one away, you don't really care.
Always on the first tackle.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, look at that game we played at St. Helens in the league. I know we were well beat and there was no qualms with the referee or anything like that because St. Helens were just a better team. And that happens. You can accept that. You can live with that. But we got two, didn't we? In the last set of the first half, went bang, bang on the first and second tackle, literally as the clock ticked over the 39th minute. And I'm thinking, piss right off. That is literally just a levelling up of the count. Yeah. What a joke that is.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, a mate of mine calls Melbourne the World Wrestling Federation because he says, you know, he can't watch it because of the wrestle all the time. And there's a thing called the Melbourne Walk where you lift a leg and you turn the player 180 degrees so he's facing his own sticks and everything. So he then has to put his leg back down, reface, you know, and all that adds to the opportunity of him losing the ball or dropping the ball or getting, you know, not playing the ball square and all the rest of it. And it's the way that Melbourne do it, the way that they've always done it. And to be honest, a couple of years ago, people were saying that was leading to the higher prevalence of people having injuries to the pec muscle. You know that horrible injury where your pec actually tears off your breastbone and kind of ruptures halfway down your arm. They reckon a lot of that was because of the lateral movement that Melbourne put players in when they're wrestling them.
Right.
And then because Melbourne did it and Melbourne did it well, every other club followed suit. So every club became a wrestling club. The six again thing was in quite a large amount was designed to kind of stop that wrestle, to speed up the play of the ball, to clear up the ruck and to reward attacking play. The problem is it's probably done the opposite because now it's so quick that you're getting all sorts of other little niggly things coming in. You're getting players artfully trying to obstruct or walking in front of the ref to unsight the ref, which is happening a lot at the moment. It's not really been picked up, but you watch it, especially in the NRL. Players standing right in front of the ref trying to block his view of the ruck. It's happening a lot. And you know, what it's actually done is it's done completely the opposite thing, because now players are on purpose doing stuff in the ruck to get that six again, just to give their players behind them that little extra second of rest, and thinking, well, it's all right, we're in the opponent's, we're right down at the other end of the field. An extra tackle's nothing. You know, it used to be that if you kick the ball dead in over the dead ball line in general play, you got that extra tackle, and people go, oh my God, no, it's a seven tackle set. You know, the other team are going to match up. People don't care about the extra tackle now. They're just, it's a hazard of a job now. You know, and it just seems like, you know, wily coaches and wily players are just, they're just wise to it. And unfortunately, it's backfired. The problem we've got now is that you've got the NRL coming out and saying things, or certainly Volandis coming out and saying, well, oh, well, maybe we'll change it now so that, you know, the side that's just been scored against, we change the kickoff and everything so that people get the ball back. And no, you're just compounding the issue. Go, you know, admit you made a slight mistake, roll it back, because you can't tinker with it any longer. The more you tinker, the more you're getting away from the spirit of the game and from what the game used to be. You need to roll it back.
It takes a brave man to admit a mistake as well, and he needs to do that. Don't get me wrong, he saved the game last year in Australia. Obviously,
to be honest, mate, I don't think it is a mistake. I don't think it's a mistake. I think you got to call it for what it is. The game probably needed it, but he's got to stand up to Channel 9 and go, these blowouts aren't helping your ratings, because the Channel 9 ratings are down year on year. So these blowouts are hurting your ratings. The way we've changed the sport, although we saved it 2 years ago, a year ago, and now starting to hurt your ratings, at the end of this year, we need to sit down and we need to really, really talk about what we're going to do next year. Because they can't change. Again, they can change the rules mid-season. Well, I wouldn't put it past them, but they shouldn't. You know, so then it becomes next year, we need to roll it back and we need to bring two refs back. And we need to stop this pissing around, and we need to get back to good games of rugby league where, you know, you had teams competitive, and you know, you didn't have these 66-0 bloody blowout scores, which is ridiculous. It's a horrible thing. I mean, there's no way, as good as Melbourne are, they're not 66 points better than the Roosters. They're not.
No.
They're not. It's the way that the game's structured at the moment that allowed that to happen.
No, I'd agree with that, and it's. Yeah, it's frustrating because, you know, I look at the NRL in particular right now, and there is a massive difference between top and bottom, don't get me wrong, but not to the point where we're getting, you know, record blowouts and more blowouts right now than we've had in 40 years. It's ridiculous. We've just gone too far with it, and yeah, it's sad to see the game in that light now and what they've done with it and where it's going. As I say, it's not what we fell in love with all those years ago, but on the contrary...
Having said that, though, mate, I would still argue that the worst game of rugby league is better than the best game of soccer.
Right, okay.
And I would argue that the worst game of rugby league is better than the best game of rugby union. And I would argue that the worst game of rugby league is better than the best game of AFL.
Right, that's
but
fair that's enough. Me. That's fair enough. I must admit, I did notice the comments on the NRL official Facebook page, and a lot of people after those blowouts were saying, you know what, tuned out, started watching AFL.
Yeah.
And that was quite common. It wasn't just one or two. It was, you know, plenty of people were doing it.
That'll hurt them. That will hurt them. Because they don't care if people go and watch the soccer, because they know they'll come back. Because soccer's boring. Especially Australian soccer. Boring as batshit. No one wants to watch it. No one goes to the games. The game's an absolute joke. It's a disgrace. The international game is far and above the reaches of the average Australian player. They'll probably qualify for the World Cup and get knocked out in the group stages. They're crap. So if people say to the NRL, we're going to go watch soccer, then they'll go, yeah, whatever. Do you know? But if you say to the NRL, we decided not to watch it and we decided to go and watch AFL, that'll frighten them, because AFL is a juggernaut. They've got lots of money behind them. And if the AFL get a foothold around kids that should be playing NRL, that's when the NRL will sit up and take notice. And they'll say to Channel 9, well, you know what, screw you, we need our game back.
Yeah.
And we won't go to Channel 9, we'll go to Channel 7, or we'll go to Channel 10, or we'll go to whoever, and we'll get a deal from them that might not be as much money as you were giving them, but by Christ, they'll let us run the sport the way we want to. That takes guts, and that takes balls, and that takes Philander stepping up, and that'll be interesting to see if it happens.
Well, that's what's needed, because the game right now, it's massively concerning the way it's heading, because it's changed that much, and it's almost becoming, like you say, like a netball type thing where it's end to end, you know, like that, or a, you know, like table tennis, like tennis, where it's just literally end to end, and that's not what rugby league is. It's more like a game of chess where you've got to, you know, strategize yourself downfield. You've got to earn the right to play at your opposition's end, and then you've got to earn your right to stay down there and post points, and then you've got to do it again once you receive the ball from the kickoff. It's not just supposed to be, you know, end to end like that, where you just turn your eye every 5 seconds. That's not what it's about. And it's really, really concerning. And the way rugby league is right now, it doesn't sit well with me. It doesn't sit well with obviously you, but it doesn't sit well with thousands of other fans, and that's the problem. And if you've got fans tuning out to watch other things, you've got fans tuning out to watch The Walking Dead on Sky, like I did last night, then there's your problem, mate. But Super League is our bread and butter in the UK. And again, I used to watch every single game on a Thursday, Friday. Well, but when I was a kid, it used to be Friday night and Saturday night. There was your two Sky slots.
Yeah.
Recently, it's changed to Thursday and Friday, but still I'd watch them religiously. Now, like I say, I'll put the game on. If it bores me, I'll turn it off. And that happens too frequently right now. Same with the NRL. And it shouldn't be like that.
Totally. And we're talking about TV audiences. Imagine what that's doing to the game from your club's point of view, when less people are actually going to watch the team play. That hits the club in the back pocket, you know? It's less programmes sold in England. It's less burgers sold for the stadium. You know, it's less people through the door. It's less beer sold. It's less everything. It's less corporate money. It's less sponsorship, you know? That's the problem. It's all very well as going, oh, you know, we aren't going to watch it on TV anymore. But if people aren't watching it on TV, it means that your sponsors go, well, why am I sponsoring a club for £100,000 a year when only this amount of people are watching it on TV and only this amount of people are going through the door? That sponsorship deal is actually worth £50,000.
Yeah.
And then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, because your corporate dollar is what's keeping the sport, arguably what's keeping the sport alive. Have you ever seen... there's a Yorkshire TV documentary called Another Bloody Sunday about Doncaster?
Yep.
Doncaster RFL in the late 70s. It's on YouTube. Highly recommend anyone watch it. It's called Another Bloody Sunday. And it shows you Doncaster, who were at the time in danger of hitting the world record for consecutive losses. And it follows the team for a couple of games. And the way that, they were operating on the smell of an oily rag, you know. They were like absolutely potless skin. But the way that they stayed alive was through a really intricate system of lotteries and scratch cards and raffles and all that kind of thing. And unfortunately, unless the game sorts itself out, that's what we're going back to.
No,
we're going back to that kind of you're living off the skill and the guile of your marketing department rather than, you know, pushing ahead and getting your corporate, you know, your local business people involved and, you know, and thriving because you've got a really, really great product to give them. It's a business. You know, at the end of the day, it's a business. And if you're a businessman and you're getting a less than fantastic deal, well, you look elsewhere for a better deal, don't you?
Exactly. I actually agree. That's the way we're going right now. And how many times do you, obviously here in the UK, the rugby league's dying. It's dying to death. Or it'd be amateur in 5 years' time. Or it'd be semi-pro, you know, at best. And I used to look at those, you know, those sort of opinions and those voices and sort of like have my head in the sand a little bit and say, nah, it will go that way.
But no,
look
at it now.
You look at it now and you think, how we've survived 125 years, well, going on 126 years now, is nothing short of a man and miracle. On both sides of the globe. Obviously, you know, 1895 here, 1908 in there, over where you are. And I think how it survived, it really is. It's nothing short of an absolute miracle. And, Yeah, just the way the game's managed, it's always been the same. I mean, I mentioned the thing about the floodlights last week with the BBC Floodlit Trophy. Oh, yeah, it's great. Great. What's the problem? No floodlights. Fucking hell, lads. It's just, you know, things like that. It's been the same all the way through the sport's existence. We don't think things through. We saw it with the England Combined Nations last week, which was a joke. I mean, the fact that there's no Pacific tests in the NRL right now. I mean, the best thing about the international game currently is Tonga. They're not playing. Why? Yeah. You know, you could argue Fiji beating New Zealand in a World Cup. Why aren't they playing? Yeah. Samoa. Well, we all know the problems with Samoa, and it stems from their coach, Matt Parish. Well, but that's obviously a whole different story. But that's the problem. You know, we've got no international game. We've got, you know, a very poor domestic game at the moment. We've got rule tinkering that's ruining the game left, right and centre. It's not in a good place. And I'm actually starting to think, I'm one of those pessimists now where I'm really, really worried. I say even the community game is a basket case.
Yeah. And then, you know, you've got your absolute pinnacle, right, which is, you know, Origin, and your NRL, which is arguably the level underneath that, right? Obviously, we've had this little bit of a COVID spike over here, right? So we've had this last round, you had some games played behind closed doors, some games played with less, you know, with a reduced capacity. The Brisbane one was allowed to go ahead because Brisbane only had two cases and they were both known contacts of other cases in quarantine and everything, so that count was allowed to go ahead. But Sydney, at the moment, is actually in lockdown. I mean, I've been wearing a mask all day at work. And it's been mandated over here that it's illegal to walk into a retail store without a mask on and without checking in with a COVID safe app and all the rest of it. In the light of all of this, right, Dragons player Paul Vaughan organises a house party. Right? Rugby league players never fucking change, right? Organises a house party, which is an illegal gathering, right? 13 players went to this. Paul Vaughan and 12 others, right? And then they made so much noise that the police were called. The police came and broke it up and arrested everyone there and then called the club and went, hey, we've got 12 of your players. They arrested everybody there, including Jack DeBellin, who's only just back in the fold at the Dragons after this rape charge and everything. And then he's under like a bit of a curfew with the Dragons, and they've said, you know, you don't step out of line and all the rest of it. And Corey Norman, who was a rumoured Hull target, and thank God we didn't get him last year, he heard the police coming and jumped over the back fence and did a runner, but left his wallet on top of the barbecue. So, right, you've got Paul Vaughan, $50,000 fine and 8-week suspension. The club of the NRL have suspended for 8 weeks for organising the party and then attempted to conceal it from the NRL because the Integrity Commission rang the Dragons. The Dragons went to Paul Vaughan and said, did you do it? And he said no. Despite the fact that they were all bloody arrested and issued with on-the-spot fines. The other 12 Dragons players at the party have all had a one-week suspension, and in total, the 12 players got about $300,000 in fines. Corey Norman is a $50,000 fine because he absconded and did a runner. So the next game that the Dragons play, they've got 13 players suspended. 13 players.
Nuts.
That's ridiculous.
You can't make that stuff up. It's just,
you know, I mean, so, you know, even though, you know, it's different times and, like you say, you know, the sport's struggling and everything, you've got idiots like this making it worse. You know, I mean, I've got a 10-year-old son. I'd love him to play rugby league. But every time something like this happens, or every time, you know, a player gets done for sexual assault, or every time someone goes out on the drink and hits somebody and it's an NRL player, or every time an NRL player gets done for drugs, or an ex-NRL player gets done smuggling drugs, you know, my wife looks at me and looks at my son and goes, really? You want him to be part of that? And it's hard to argue. It's really hard to argue with.
That's the problem.
So, you know, yeah. I don't know, mate. The sport's got a long way to get back to where it was, I think. There's a long road back.
There is, yeah. It's less Peter Flanders.
She's wrong. He will be a rugby league player.
Well, he has to be with a name like Jack Harrison.
He does with a name like Jack Harrison, yeah. That's why I called him it. So.
Yeah, but I do get it. And I do get it, like you say, when you've got your Peter Vanses, he's making these decisions and you've got, you know, the players entering, you know, dickhead policies, and it's just,
yeah,
it's tough. It's tough to get behind at times, it really is. And
yeah,
you look at we're looking at this and just spent half an hour ranting about the game as a whole, and I'm not happy with the way Super League's heading. I'm not happy with the way the NRL's heading. I'm not happy with the way State of Origin's gone, because again, the two games there have been an absolute farce for me. That's not what Origin's about. You know, watching New South Wales win 50-6 and 26-0, that's not Origin. You know, the international game's non-existent. I mean, that was brilliant. Going to watch that England series 3 years ago against New Zealand, I went with three of my mates, Zane, Fresh, Paul Campbell and Johnny Compton. Like I say, went to all three tests, had a great time. Liverpool, Leeds and obviously in our home city of Hull. Brilliant. You know, barring that fast last week, England haven't played since. That's 3 years nearly.
Yeah.
See, it's a joke. Yeah. You know, COVID or no COVID, it's embarrassing. You don't see that with a football team, cricket.
It's exactly what we said. It's exactly what we said last week, mate. COVID or no COVID, right? Okay, you got COVID and you're saying that, right, in that case, we can't have games against Australia or New Zealand or Tonga or Samoa or Fiji or whatever. Great, no problem. Let's play France.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, how hard is that?
It's not difficult at all, is it? And like you say, you don't make them come up to Lee Sports Village. You'll go down to Perpignan, to Carcassonne, and you play them there to lose.
Yeah.
And you grow, and you help them grow the game again. And they'll give us a game. They really will. I mean, like you say, with Bangladesh last week, got a bit of a soft spot for French rugby league, because they're the pioneers out there. They're the ones that stood up to the bloody Nazis. You don't get many people doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, there's always a soft spot there for the French game. But yeah, just the way the whole game's going right now, it just doesn't sit well with me. But then, on the contrary, right now, looking at our club, Hull FC, and they're absolute complete opposite of everything. They're doing everything right. Obviously, the big thing this year was to sort the head coaching out, and they did that by bringing Brett Hodgson in. And you look at the way Brett Hodgson's conducted himself this year, he is full of class. Yeah. Never moans, just gets on with the job. They brought Josh Reynolds in. Never hear him in the papers out drinking or anything like that. Just gets on with his job. Breath of fresh air, been revving up the young lads for all to see on the pitch. Brilliant. You know, what a signing that's been. You've got co-captains right now. You've got Mark Sneed, Scott Taylor. They are, you know, Danny Outon as well. Two of those blokes live and breathe for FC and have done since they were, 3 years old. Mark Sneed's come to the club, embraced everything about it. You know, got himself a young family. Pre-COVID was helping out with the reserves. They are perfect ambassadors for the club. You look at what Hull do. Hull FC for the past 3 years have been practically running the community game in Hull. They've been doing that right now. It's basically some of the boys that from West Hull work from the club, and they've been running the amateur game in Hull now. So they do all that. Hull's engagement in the community is ridiculous, and you look at what Hull FC do, absolutely brilliant. And that's my club, and I'm very proud that the fact that's transcending onto the pitch now as well, where we've got a team that literally never backed down. Our fighting qualities are absolutely sensational now, and that's what we all fall in love with. That's rugby league. So if Hull can do it, and if Hull can tick all those boxes, why aren't Super League? Why aren't the NRL? Why aren't the Rugby League International Federation as well? Why aren't they sorting out the international game? You know, if Hull can do it, there's your blueprint. You know, they've literally sucked every fan back in this year and made them fall in love with them again. It can be done.
Yeah, look, I've never been, I can't think of many times when I've been prouder to be a Hull supporter, honestly. And, you know, even when we were winning stuff, 2016, 2017, there was still, you still looked at it and went, oh, for Christ's sake, you know, we took our foot off the gas, we should have won the league. Or, you know, there were still issues with playing staff, or there were still issues with coaching, and there was still stuff there where we weren't quite right. And now, we haven't been, you know, there's that old thing, you know, we lost but we didn't get beat, which wasn't that one of Tim Sheen's little things when he was at Rovers, get beat. But that's kind of true. We've lost games this year, but we've never been towelled up. You know, we've never been embarrassed. We've kept on fighting until the absolute last minute. And you know, some of the games that we've won, arguably last year, year before, 10 years ago, we'd have lost. We just got this resilience, and we've, you know, from the start when Hodgson came to the club, and from his pre-season training, from him setting his expectations of the squad early, he's never looked back. And like you say, he is a class act. I'm really, really pleased with the way that the club's going. I think our recruitment and retention's been pretty spot on as well. I can't really fault anything there. And, you know, I'm interested to see what he does next year, but obviously this is in the shadow of COVID and players might not decide that they want to come over. It's also in the shadow of the six again debacle in the NRL, which we've just been talking about, which might mean that players do want to come over. So I'll be very interested to see what happens next. But like you say, as a half-term report, you've got to give Hull at worst a B+ and probably, you know, getting on towards an A.
Yeah, I would be bordering A territory. And I completely echo what you just said there, you know. You think of, as a fan right now, just two average fans watching Hull FC this year. And I can't remember many times where I've been prouder, because all we want in Hull FC performance is to show effort and show that fight and that resilience. And we've seen that in abundance this year. And when you get that, the result, I won't say it's irrelevant, but you can take it, win, lose or draw. You can take getting beat if they don't throw the towel in. Like that cup semi-final is a prime example. Everything going against us. Josh Griffin, you know, horrible injury, horrible circumstances, horrible scenario. You know, we've all had our opinions on that and we've shared them. But at the end of the day, that situation was a freak situation and it was horrible to watch. Yeah. And as a player, you're watching that and you just see one of your best mates go down with an Achilles injury and get carried off the pitch, you know, in tears. And get yourself revved up to still go in the second half and pull the game out your ass and almost claw it back and then be a pass away from reaching Wembley. That's balls of steel. Last week, 10-0down at half-time against Huddersfield. Two academy players that have never played first team on the bench. Another one who's played half a dozen. You bring a player back on loan from the Championship. You're literally about a makeshift side as you can possibly get. And you're not bothered. You just carry on. You just crack on with the job and you pull a result back and you end up winning 17-10. With your big leaders and your Josh Reynolds and your Max Needs revving that side up and getting the job done. I mean, things like that, that's what you live for, isn't it? And then you get the other side. You get your Lee away where, we turn it on. You've got Jake Connor up fullback who's been phenomenal. You know, you turn it on, you put 64 points and 12 tries past them. It's just the manner of the victories. That's what it's all been about this year for me.
And to your point, Hodgson has been all class. We've won with dignity and we've lost with dignity.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't won a game and gone, well, we needed to win that because the other team were this and the other team were that, and I think, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like you would with a couple of coaches that you know, when you've had a good win, they kind of crow about it a little bit. Hodgson's always won with class and with dignity. And he's arguably, when we've lost a game, he's kind of said, well, this is why we lost it. We did this right, we did this right, we didn't do that right, we need to get smarter here, we didn't go into here. And he's been actually really analytical and been quite open about it as well. I found him quite a transparent coach. He will call a spade, and that's something to be said for a coach. Because sometimes you do get the odd coach that, you know, you Wayne Bennett's of the world, who play the cards so close to the chest that, you know, post-match press conference is pointless because they don't say anything.
Yeah.
You know, they just sit there and it's one-word answers or anything. He's been a real ambassador to the club, and he's bought into our ethos and into the history of the club brilliantly, I think, probably better than any overseas coach I've ever seen, probably with the exception Smith, who was just a freak on his own when we first got him. I just think he gets it and he gets us, and, you know, almost the perfect appointment, I think.
Absolutely. And then when he brought his one major signing for 2021 over in Josh Reynolds, it was things like him tweeting the lyrics to Old Faithful just after he signed. You get the fans on board. They're already, you know, they're already in love with you. It's just things like that. You know, you're creating that family feel again. And I think the rapport with fans and club right now is really good. Obviously, you do get your doomsayers and, you know, your people on social media who are never happy. But you're going to get that in every aspect of life. But I think overall, you've got to be absolutely buzzing with what Hull have produced so far this year. I mean, you look at it right now. Hull sit fourth in Super League. Played 11, won 7, drawn 1, lost 3. You know, got to the semi-final of the Challenge Cup, winning 2 rounds, unfortunately got knocked out by Saints. We've been competitive in every single game, which is all we can really ask for. Our defensive improvements have been notable. We're better with the ball now. Our shape, our structures are miles better. Our execution has been improving in recent weeks to make those look even better. They say we're resilient, we fight, we never back down. You've got to be content with that, haven't you?
Totally. And look, I mean, obviously, as a club we're moving forward. But let's actually nut it down a little bit further to the individual improvements in some of the players. You know, it's the best that Jake Connor's played in his career. Guaranteed, that's the best he's played in his career. It's the best that Chris Sattai's played in his entire career. It's the best that Liggy Sow's played in his entire career. You know, it's the best that Adam Swift's played in his entire career. He's just got them playing out of their skin. He's got them absolutely working for each other. And it's because of the team ethos and the team work ethic and everything that they're doing this. It's not because they want to play for Hodgson. It's because they want to play for each other. And he's instilled this in them. And he's instilled this in them from the first training session when he started saying to them, it's all about defence. We're going to learn how to defend while we're under extreme fatigue. And then he flogged them. He flogged them in training until they were absolutely nearly throwing the guts up, and then said to them, when you're in this position, when you're feeling this tired, you still need to defend like it's the first tackle of the first set of the game. You still need to be in the same formation. You still need to be in the same defensive mindset that you're in at the first tackle of the game. And he's got them thinking that way, mate. It's genius. It really is. And he's obviously been sat in Australia in an assistant role and in various pathways roles and stuff, forming his own ethos and whole of the club that he's putting it all into practice for. And brilliant, you know, it's great. It's great to see. I mean, you know, that could have really backfired. We could have got a Trent Barrett, who's been doing exactly the same for years and years and years and trying to formulate his own ethos as a coach, then goes to a Man League side that had been top eight for years and years and years, misses the finals for 2 years with them, gets sacked, and then the bloke they bring in after him with exactly the same squad and exactly the same thing gets him into the top four the year after. And then, you know, goes back to being an assistant coach at Penrith. Everyone has the plaudits for him, saying, you know, he's the attacking coach and he's fantastic. And, you know, we've won the comp, we've got to the final of the comp basically because of Trent Barrett's fantastic attacking coach. And then he goes to the Bulldogs and he's getting absolutely towed up week in, week out now. You know, it can backfire when you get a young coach that's trying to develop this completely new way of coaching for him and you know, man-managing for the first time. But bloody hell, it looks like Hodgson's got the skills in spades. Really does. We've been very lucky.
Yeah, we have. And
it's an astute signing. Yeah. It's a very astute coaching appointment, that.
Yeah, and like I say, the blows who appointed him at the club deserve, you know, big credit for that, because like you say, in a Trent Barrett, yeah, it could have gone horrendously wrong. And with Stephen Kearney, it could have gone wrong. But yeah, they got the right man for the job there, and fair play to him. Standouts this year, going down the individual route, you can't really look past Jake Connor and Chris Sattai, can you? And again, that was a ballsy decision.
You really can't.
I mean, Hodgson's first, obviously his first big decision to make when he got here was either to sign a halfback or to sign a fullback, depending on where he obviously wanted Jake Connor to play. And he opted to put Connor at fullback, so he got an halfback in. Obviously, if he put Connor at halfback, he would have got a fullback in. But he went with the former, put Connor at fullback. It's been an absolute revelation. 17 try assists this year in 10 league games. Obviously, remembering that he missed the Huddersfield one. So that's 17 and 10. Ridiculous. He stands up no matter who he plays against. You know, he's a big game player for the big moment. Yeah, like I say, sometimes in that cup semi-final it won't come off, but 9 times out of 10 it will. I mean, it's just shock horror since that cup semi-final, he's put about 10 tries on plates, you know, in the cast in the league game. So, yeah, he's a phenomenal player. The natural talent at his disposal is ridiculous, but he makes it look effortless. It just comes natural to him. I think that's the key thing with Connor. He just makes everything look so slick, and he's great to watch. Mm-hmm. He's the type of bloke that you want to pay your money to, you know, to go see. And Chris Sattai has been a wrecking ball, hasn't he? You know, nothing less. He's been sensational from minute one.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got players playing the best. All you can ask for from a player is that they give everything and that they perform to the best of their abilities. And sometimes in a team, unless it's an absolute champion team, you maybe get 4 or 5 playing their absolute best. You know, you'll get another 4 or 5 playing to a really great standard and you know, a consistently high standard. You get a couple that'll have an average game every 2 or 3, and then you get players that are on the down low and maybe on the way out of the club, or, you know, heading to retirement, or you know, or a fringe first graders that aren't quite up to speed yet. They'll be playing, you know, probably 60% or 70% of what they're capable of. Hull this year especially defensively, are right up in that top echelon. Every player, every week. I can't honestly look at a Hull performance this year and point at a player and go, you were below par. Yet they might have made an individual mistake, you know, and like you said, you know, people having to go at Mahir Fanua when, or having to go at Cam Scott when someone scored a try in their corridor of defence, you know. That's different to having an all-round poor performance. A poor performance is dropping the ball every time you get it. It's, you know, not running your way. It's getting driven back in the tackle. It's, you know, not putting your hand up to take the ball and going missing out the back of the ruck. I can't think of a single player that's done that. I really can't. I can think of plenty of NRL players that do it week in, week out and still get a jersey. But I honestly, hand on heart, can't look at a whole performance this year and look at a player and go, you didn't deserve to be in that shirt.
I completely agree with that.
And what a breath of fresh air that is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the key thing. You can rave about your Jake Connors, your Chris Sattars, your Adam Swifts. But what Hodgson's done to Brad Fash this year, what Hodgson's done with people like Mahir Fanua, who took a lot of criticism last year and who wasn't at his best, and will probably be the first to admit that, but has come back this year and has been nothing short of superb. I mean, Brad Fash, the challenge for him was to get to the next level, because he's at an age now at 25 where he needed to do that. Under Hodgson, he's done that and more. You know, he's been sensational. He's been the foil for the people like Satire. He's doing a job week in, week out. You know, pretty much error free. You know, starting to make some real significant metres now as well. He's coming off the bench and making, you know, 120, 130 metres, which is superb for an interchange prop. And it's just people like that as well who he's bringing on to the next level. Like, say, rediscovering the flair of Mahir Fanua again. It was been brilliant. I think he scored in his last five or six games now. And it's like the Fanua of his first spell at the club. It's brilliant. And same with Fash. You know, he's been sensational. Cam Scott, you know, like you say, he's took a few pelters from fans, but his last two performances, you know, prior to his injury, I know he came back for the Huddersfield game. I don't think he was fully fit, but he still did a job for us. But those performances in the Cup semi and against Cass, you know, he showed some real signs there that there's a player there.
No, mate. I can't argue, mate. And you look at it with, you know, your Mahir, and happy birthday today, Mahir, by the way. It's his birthday today. But, you know, Mahir, Swift, you know, Connor at fullback, Connor Wynn coming into the team and you know, after being on loan out of the club and everything and grasping it with both hands, you know, you say Cam Scott, bring Jack Logan back and him scoring a try after making a few mistakes and everything. It's fairy tale stuff, isn't it? And you know, you expect a player that used to be a back moving into coaching, you'd expect that from the backs. What's impressed me more than anything else is what we've done to our forwards. Fash. Bowden's looked a lot better this year when he's been so unlucky with injuries as Josh Bowden. I really feel for him. But when he's been on the pitch, he's looked better this year than he's looked for a couple of years. You know, Sow and Satai. What the hell? You know, Keita, Lane, Johnston even, who has really come to the fore this year for me, Johnston. I think he's looked really good in patches.
His effort against Huddersfield last week was incredible.
Yeah.
He put a right shift in at hooker and then as a middle as well.
Yeah, I really like it. I like what I'm seeing. I really do. And you, like I say, you expect that from a player that played all his career in the backs. You expect him to give the backs a bit of flair and all the rest of it. But the way that he's brought our forwards on, mate, woof, that's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And the two back rows as well, Manu Mau and Andre Savelio, they've been superb. You know, it's shock horror. They get a bit of continuity in appearances and like two, you know, two different players, if you like. I mean, they've been brilliant this year, both of them. It was nice to see Savelio get his hat-trick, obviously, at Lee and score a couple of tries. Same with Manu Mau. I mean, Mau's been incredible. He not just using him as a battering ram now, he's running wider and he's getting on top of people and he's putting oppositions on the back foot, you know, getting quick play of the balls and then the next play, you know, he's up and running. He's been superb and it's just, it's things like that.
Last year, mate, when this side was formed, you know, because again, we've got to reiterate, this is Radford's Scott side. It is, right? When this side was formed, I think I wrote a blog and I said, the one thing that you're going to be really, really seeing from the whole side is offloads. Because Sow can offload, Satai can offload, Mau can offload, Mahir offloads, Farimo offloads. Do you know, they're all Griffin offloads. You know, you're going to see a lot of offloads, a lot of second phase play from Hull. And we never really got it because that's not the style that Radford like to play in and all the rest of it. And again, you know, we'd use Mo as a battering ram rather than running him wide where he was so devastating playing for Parramatta. But it's like Hodgson hasn't done it overnight. He's done it by degrees, and he's allowed the freedom to creep into the game, and he's given them a little bit more freedom week to week, I think, and now we look a completely different attacking unit to the attacking unit that we seem to have week one of this season, you know, which was based on defence and grind and all the rest of it. The nice thing is we've still got the defence and the grind, but he's allowing them that little bit more freedom now. And it's great. You know, it's just, we just seem to be playing with a lot more freedom. We seem to be playing with a lot more confidence. And that comes from winning games.
Yeah, the shackles are definitely off right now. But what I love about Hodgson's all is when they make a mistake, they're not fazed by it, and they'll keep going, they'll keep trying. And I say, yeah, I've mentioned it a few times, but that Castleford display was your prime example, because they did make a few errors, but they never went away from that shape and that structure. And once they nail the execution, the points will come. And as I say, even the summer months now, we've got supposedly drier tracks. Although it must said it pissed it down for the St Helens game last night. But usually you do get your drier weather now and your firmer pitches, and it's sort of self-explanatory for that expansive game. And I think it's no coincidence that we've seen it in all in recent weeks. And I think we will do now as July progresses and as we come into August and September. The tools are all there. You know, you've got a great spine in Sneed, Mark Sneed, Josh Reynolds, Jake Connor at fullback. I mean, it was obviously disappointing to see he'll be out for a month at least with a medial cruciate ligament injury. But, you know, it is what it is, isn't it? Hopefully he'll be, you know, says he's a quick healer. Hodgson did say that in his one of his press conferences. So hopefully it will be a quicker than anticipated return. I mean, we'll hope so, because Connor's a huge, obviously, cog in that attacking wheel.
Yeah, he is. Absolutely he is. And you know, it's a shame, but unfortunately, what did we say, didn't we? Whenever he got picked for a game like that, you looked at it and went, oh, God. It's going to happen. It's bound to happen. But, you know, the way, you know, you put Swift there, or you can put Connor Wynn there, you can bring Farimo in for Swift, you can, you know, we've got lots of options now. I like it, you know. It's one of those where you used to take a cog out of the Hull FC machine and the machine had stopped working. Now you can take a cog out of the Hull FC machine and put another cog in. And although the machine won't work in exactly the same way, it'll still work after a fashion. You know, and that's great. We haven't got a deep squad. We haven't got a lot of strength in depth, but the strength in depth that we've got is smart, because you've got players that can do a job across the field.
Yeah. And this is what Hodgson wanted to implement when he came to the club. He said he wants people to be adaptable, to have that versatility within them. And we're seeing that right now. Connor Wynn's one example, shining at centre one week, then fullback the next. You've got to do a job no matter where you come in or where you come into the side. And I think we are seeing that right now. As far as expectations go for the rest of the season, as I say, we're sat in fourth place in the Super League after 11 games, pretty much the halfway stage, because I don't think we'll be seeing all 25 Rams that are scheduled.
Yeah.
I think now... Yeah. It's not, the challenge now is not to drop below fourth, and if we can do that, get a playoff win, you know, stick with the positives that we've seen in our performances and results this year, then that will go down as a great first season for Hodgson, and then you build on that next year.
Yeah, totally. And you know, we've said it before, we're capable of beating any team in that league. We really are. We arguably should have beat Saints in the Cup. You know, we did beat Wigan in the Cup. You know, we are capable of beating any team in that league. We really are. And you know, we stay in fourth, or maybe creep up to third, and then it's knockout football. You know, we could beat any team in that league, and we're a bloody good outside bet for it, I think.
Yeah, we've got a chance. I think we've got a fair chance. I mean, it will take a special performance to beat a Catalans or a St Helens, or even a Warrington in a one-off game, but it's not unachievable. It's certainly there for the taking if we can, like you say, all you need to do is get all your cards right on the day, don't you? And if you can put in performance in the 80 minutes, then you've got a chance.
Totally. And the thing is, mate, he seems to have got rid of that bogey result that was all Hull FC were always capable of. You know, losing twice to Rovers a couple of years ago. You know, losing to Huddersfield, losing to Salford. You know, going to Cass and getting turned over, going to Wakefield and getting turned over. You know, those results seem to be out of our DNA at the moment. and we can keep them out of our DNA, and we beat, you know, we finished third or fourth and beat every team below us, you know, you can still finish third or fourth and lose to a Saints and a Wigan and a Warrington or a Castle or whatever. You know, as long as you beat all of those teams below you and you don't slip up and you don't have that bogey result, you know, that seems to be out of our DNA at the moment. And therefore, you know, you get up to third or fourth and then it's anybody's, because it's straight knockout football, isn't it? It's just, you just, when you get to the end of the season, you go, right, we've got to win every game now. That's it.
Yeah, that's the mentality. That's the mentality we've got to have.
It is, you know, it becomes a cup competition.
Yeah, and obviously we don't tend to save our best, you know, for those games. But yeah, we're just really content with what we've seen so far. As I say, everything Hodgson's done has been absolutely superb. Just the fighting qualities that he's installed into the side. It's just the manner of the victories right now that stand out. It's the manner of defeat as well, and that's so important, because it's all right getting beat. We can accept that. It's when we get smashed, and it's when we show that lack of fight, and that's when fans cry, you know, cry foul, because that's unacceptable. But we don't get that under Hodgson right now. And when you get, like I say, all that resilience, all that fight, you can get behind it. And yeah, as we always say, a long way to continue.
Yes, yeah, totally.
So to finish off then, Hull FC NRL connections. This week we've gone for up Cronulla.
Yeah, Cronulla Sharks. Now, this surprised me, this one. There's been actually quite a lot of players. There was a big... I think a lot of it was due to the Sean McRae kind of... connection, because he'd been a coach at Cronulla, and we seemed to pick up a lot of players in the very early 2000s. A lot of players came from Cronulla to Hull, but it started a lot earlier than that. The first player I can find to have played for both Hull and the Cronulla Sharks was Vince Farrer, who had a season with Cronulla in 1974. And at the time, Vince Farrer was playing, I think, for Featherstone. Came to Hull in the late 70s and was part of our Invincibles.
It was the first one, team. Bunting Sand, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was the first player, Vince Farrer. And you know, was a good journeyman forward and had been a good player for a long, long time. But yeah, he had a season with Cronulla in 74. And he's the first one I could find. Now, since then, Gary Lester, who was one of our players in the year that we won the second division, not the first division as it was, below Super League. He scored the winning try, 97, at Huddersfield, at what was then called the Gal Farm Stadium. An absolute Hull FC legend for that alone. And then played until about 99, I think. First couple of seasons of Super League that we had. Good player, Gary Lester. Good standoff. And was an ex-Cronulla player. Other than that, Richie Barnett played for Cronulla and us. Had a good try to games ratio for us, did Richie Barnett. This is Richie Barnett senior, obviously. Played 38 games for us and scored 23 tries, which is a hell of a tries to games played ratio. Andrew Hick, who was a prop, played for us in 2000. He's ex-Cronulla Sharks as well. Sean Ryan, obviously. Who came across same time as Adam Maher and all the rest of them. He's an ex-Cronulla Shark. Ben Samet, who was our fullback in the 2000 season, came from, I think he came from Gateshead, Ben Samet. And he was quite unlucky, Ben Samet. That year there was the year that, obviously, we had all those players from Gateshead. And he kind of replaced Steve Prescott in our team and then was replaced by Prescott the year after. And we decided not to re-sign Ben Samet, which was unfortunate, actually, because he was a very good fullback. And I quite like Ben Samet in a whole shirt.
That year, we had to get rid of some of the overseas players, didn't we?
We were given special dispensation that first year, but we had to reduce it to the normal amount of overseas players, which meant that we cut a hell of a lot of very, very good players. And in fact, the next player I'm going to mention was one of those, was Matt Daylight, who only played one season for us in that 2000 season. 12 tries in 22 matches, Matt Daylight, a really, really lightning fast winger. Matt Daylight, and another one who was unlucky not to be re-signed, I think. Obviously, the late great Adam Maher as well was an ex-Cronulla player and did wonders in a Hull shirt and was as hard as nails, and I never saw him take a backward step. And rest in peace, Adam, because that was an absolute tragedy. Adam Dykes, talking of Adams as well, Adam Dykes, an ex-Cronulla player, replaced, you know, we said we didn't re-sign Matt Head because Adam Dykes was coming. I think he's one thing he's remembered for probably was a very good game in the semi-final of the Cup. When we got to the final of the Cup, was it 2008?
Doncaster.
Did very well in the semi-final of the Cup, but didn't play the final, did he? He was injured for the final.
Yeah, that's right. Tommy Lee was in the arse, and Richard Horn came off the bench. It was just after his neck injury. He looked like a schoolboy.
Yes. Yeah.
James Graham absolutely clobbered him.
Yeah, he did. You know, he killed him. And there was that moment, wasn't there, when he went down and you went, oh, God. Yeah, and then he got back up again.
Yeah, it was one of those moments where you're actually like, head in hands thinking, oh, God. You know, you're actually worried for his welfare, thinking, is he all right? Is he actually going to get up? That's how serious it was.
Yeah, it was bad, yeah. Yeah. And of all players to hit him, James Graham, Jesus. Craig Greenhill, Knuckles, ex-Cronulla player. Colin Best, who we spoke about last week in a St George Illawarra. He actually, when he left Hull, he went back to Cronulla. Paul McNicholas, the Huntsman. Paul McNicholas was an ex-Cronulla Sharks player as well, as was Dean Treister, who came across for half a season as a hooker for us. But I think that was about 2003 as well, 2003-2004,
Dean Treister. 2003, his debut at Cass, remember it, drew 26-all.
A good player, Dean Treister, very gobby, very loud, probably a proto, pre-Josh Reynolds, Josh Reynolds. He never showed up, Dean Treister. And he could put a lot of players offside as well. And I don't think that it was a very happy camp when Dean Treister turned up, because it was very much a Cronulla old boys, back then as well. You know, there was a lot of ex-Cronulla players in that side, I think he put a few players offside, and there was a bit of a move afoot not to re-sign him. Mm. I remember there being a bit of rumble there. Colin Best was spoken about. Ryan McGoldrick. I mean, only eight appearances for all, I think, Ryan McGoldrick, but... He's an ex-Cronulla Sharks player as well, was Ryan McGoldrick. Obviously, Sam Moa.
Ah.
Now, Sam Moa, one game for Cronulla, that was it. He came off the bench and played 20 minutes for Cronulla in the last game of the season, I think it was. I think it was the last game of the season before he joined us. And obviously, we signed him more or less sight unseen, Sam Moa. But became an absolute legend, and then came back over here and played for the Roosters, and was probably unlucky not to get man of the match in the grand final that he played. I thought that he played for the Sydney Roosters. He was absolutely fantastic that year. But he's an ex Cronulla player. He's old Hutch Mahiava, and played round seven. When the West Tigers beat Cronulla 2016, and he came off the bench and played 20 minutes.
Wow.
There you go. And that was it. Josh Cordoba, who had half a season with us, he's an ex-Cronulla Sharks player, as is Albert Kelly. Now, Albert Kelly didn't last very long at Cronulla. He didn't last very long anywhere. In fact, Hull's the side he's lasted longest at, actually, Albert Kelly. But he played... let's have a look. He played 14 games over two seasons. He debuted for Cronulla 2010, played five games that season, and then nine games the season after before he was released. Didn't play at all in 2012, and was more or less just jobbing around the lower leagues. I think he went to Parramatta for a while, was sacked. He went to Newcastle for a while and was sacked. Ended up at the Gold Coast Titans, and then obviously to Rovers, and then to us. And now he's playing his trade in Brisbane, but has a hamstring injury at the moment and won't be playing again. Brett Seymour as well, and Daniel Holdsworth, both ex-Cronulla Sharks players. And then the one I've been saving up, Hutch Mahiava. Good old Hutch Mahiava was an ex I can't even say it with a straight face. was an ex Cronulla Sharks player. Good old Hutch.
Yeah.
And he had a brother He had a brother called Starsky, because his parents were mad Starsky and Hutch support watchers back in the 70s. So, yeah, he was called Hutch Mayava, and his brother was called Starsky Mayava. There you go.
Oh, you learn something new every day.
It's true. True story. Although it sounds stupid, but it's dead true.
Yeah, brilliant. Good list there. Obviously, a lot of players.
Massive list, yeah.
Post-turn of the millennium, yeah. That was a big one.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see. I'd say we're getting into like your Parramatta territories now, aren't we? And your South Sydney's to come, and Sydney Roosters. Yeah.
I'm putting it off.
Yeah, they're going to be long.
Yeah, they are, but they're going to be long because we had players come across kind of pre-war, you know, and pre-First World War as well. You know, a few players came across from those foundation clubs as they are. But yeah, the more recent teams, you know, your Cronulla Sharks and stuff, that they've all been kind of post-millennium.
Yeah, good stuff, mate. Yeah, and I suppose as we say for the rest of the year now, it's just obviously build on the foundations that we've set under Brodgson and Co. and keep building, see what's what with recruitment, see how else we retain from that list, and yeah, and just try to keep on improving. And I think, you know, all signs right now are that Hull will just do that, and they'll continue to do that. And yeah, I think we're ticking all those boxes right now, aren't we?
Yeah, we are, and it's. You know, what we're looking for now is more of the smart. That's what we're looking at. We're looking for that slow, steady improvement, and we're looking for that same defensive resolve, and we won't go far wrong.
And as for rugby league as a whole, Christ, it's buzzing.
B minus, must do better. See me after class.
I was thinking after school detention, maybe permanent expulsion for a few people within our game right now. But yeah, yes. I mean, very happy with Hull, but as I say, the larger game right now, rugby league, it just doesn't sit well with me.
No, you're right.
All right, we'll leave that there though for this podcast. Hopefully we'll have a good win to talk about next week. Cheers for your time, mate. Come on, you all.
Cheers, mate.